Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Live. Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. Welcome in. It is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's great to have you with us today as we will take you for the next about hour and a half, hour 40 minutes. We lead you into our coverage of St. Louis Cardinals baseball. Cardinals-Giants game two of a three-game series after a good win. Good win. In case you didn't stick with us all the way to the end yesterday, it was a good win for the Cardinals. They won 6-5. Good win for the good performance from the bullpen as well. Not all the A guys being used. They had some guys down. So like a Ryan Fernandez came out and did his job yesterday and did it well. So that was good to see when there's this little time left in the season and you're really not going to be a playoff team. You kind of look for every single game. Okay, what value was there in this one? And I actually think the value in yesterday's game was what we saw from Ryan Fernandez. I had to chuckle today. If you were with us during Redbird Rush Hour, you heard Oliver Marmol talking through where they're at with Yvonne Herrera, and he opened up the cut talking about how Herrera was so excited to hit one yesterday off of Verlander. And that's cool. Like, that's, you know, Verlander's one of the all-time greats. Verlander's a future Hall of Famer. Verlander's all this stuff. And you got a young guy like Yvonne Herrera who hits a home run off of him. And forever and ever and ever, Herrera can say that he got Verlander. So that's that was a good part of yesterday's game for sure. As always, if you want to chime in with us, you can call in at 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Or for those of you who are watching on the video stream, feel free to leave a comment in the chat, and we will get to those as we go along through the evening. The news of the day is the ABS system coming in. We talked about it a bunch on Redbird Rush Hour. I don't want to completely repeat what I said earlier, but in case you're just joining, I'm happy. I'm really happy. I like it. I think it fixes. You're going to pick and choose where you use it. There's going to be a strategy to how you use it. It's going to, honestly, it's going to help hitters, I think, understand the strike zone that much better. Because if you know that you can get a strike back or you can get a ball added, whatever it might be, being able to know the strike zone, that's going to be something that's going to be beneficial and valuable to a club. So I'm glad that's coming next year. I had the benefit of being able to see it play out during spring training because they used it during the spring. It was great. I loved it. I talked about it in Redbird Rush Hour the fact that there's such a kind of a showmanship aspect to it where it's just like tennis, and the actual technology is very similar to the tennis one. If you don't watch a lot of tennis, that's fine. You can challenge whether or not a ball's on the line or not in tennis, and there's basically a video illustration that shows where the tennis ball landed. That's going to be that's what it is. It's the same type of technology. There's going to be cameras in every single ballpark, very high level cameras. The margin of error for the cameras is going to be 1/6 of an inch. So that's how close they are going to be able to that's how close they're going to be able to get it. I like it. I'm happy with it. So that's going to be good. I chuckle a little bit because just got a text message because I'm talking as if the season will be over at the end of this week, which I think it will be. But I just got a text message from somebody, and it reads, the Cardinals have a chance to slide in the playoffs, right? From a mathematical standpoint, yes. From a practical standpoint, no. Cardinals are 3.5 games back. They would need the Reds and the Mets and the Diamondbacks to all lose a lot of games over the next 5 days. And just they in all likelihood will be eliminated as we get into the weekend. But they are not yet mathematically eliminated. And that takes, I wasn't totally planning. I always pull a few cuts from Oliver Marmol's Tuesday conversation with the Gas House Gang. We only used one of them today on Redbird Rush Hour. This one was the other one that I thought was kind of interesting that that Ollie had to say today. He was asked about his regrets for the season, because when all is said and done, Cardinals are going to miss the playoffs probably by 2, 3, 4, at the most 5 games. Not really that much. They're 3.5 back right now. So this was what Ollie had to say today when it comes to where is he at from a regret standpoint.
Man, the thing that sticks out that is disappointing, and it's probably more on my, I wish I could have done more leading into the trade deadline in order to keep some guys and maybe just add a small piece to give us a shot. You look at where we're at today, we're 3 or 3.5 out, whatever the case may be, after losing those three guys and having Donovan out for a while, Contreras out for a while, Burley out for a while, Nato out for a ton of time, Mason Wynn. And it's, you get to the end. The only reason you do this is to win. That is the only you do this in order to get to this point of the season and have a shot to play some games in October, and that's the fun part. So that's the part that gets me every morning over the last 10 days or so. It's like, damn it, we're so close, and I wish I could have done something different, something a little bit better leading into that trade deadline to give ourselves a shot. But unfortunately, here's where we're at, and what I'd love is our guys are still taking their best shot. They're not going to give in until that last game, which is awesome.
So yeah, and I've said this over and over the last few days. We can evaluate this team from two different perspectives. One perspective is they're just barely out of the playoffs. They are an almost playoff team. So if you want to view them as how far are they from being a team that can just get into the playoffs, not that far. They're 3.5 games out right now with 5 games to go. That you don't have to squint that much to see a small thing here, a small thing there to make up that ground. So they're very close to being a playoff club. How close are they to being a team that's a legit contender for the World Series, that you just look at the roster and go, this team can play with anybody on any given night. This team can win a short season series. This team can win a long series. This team is just built to win. They're far away from that. That is something that they still have a ways to go. So you can be close to the postseason, but far from the World Series. And I know there's people who are saying, well, you can always go on a run. You can always go on a miraculous run. And I always respond with, hope's not a strategy. Are there situations where not very good teams go on great playoff runs? Yeah, it happens. But if that's what you're planning for, I would push back and say, that's not what to plan for. So that's where the club is at right now. We'll continue to talk Cardinals baseball as we go through the course of the evening. But up next, we're going to talk with John Morosi. He recently did a long-form conversation with Scott Rolen as part of his Road to Cooperstown show series. It was fantastic. I listened to it last night. I loved it. And we'll talk through that a little bit coming up in just a moment. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are taking you up until coverage of Cardinals baseball tonight. They are in San Francisco going to match up against the Giants. Andre Pallante against Logan Webb, the pitching matchup. I'm really excited about this next conversation. Last night, I listened to the Road to Cooperstown show where John Morosi spoke with Scott Rolen, and it is so good. I was at one point, it was time for me to go to bed. I was like, I can't go to bed until I finish this. I really enjoyed it. And with that, we do welcome John Morosi onto the program. John, thanks so much for taking some time. How are you?
Well, Matt, thank you so much for the invitation to be on the show today. Really appreciate it, and thanks for the kind words on the podcast as well. Thank you so much.
So, for people who are not familiar, you talk with Hall of Famers, and the conversations are largely based around their path to their baseball journey, and also you'll pick out some pieces from their Hall of Fame speech and kind of ask some follow-up questions on that. What led to starting this show? Because it's such a great idea, and these conversations are so amazing. And it's just great that these things are happening just for us to have forever and ever.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. And to be honest, the journey of hosting the podcast is really one of the great honors I've had in my career and my life, to be honest with you, because when I think about it, and I'm a father now myself, and I look at my kids and say, wait a minute, if you had told me when I was their age that it'd be part of my job to interview Hall of Famers for an hour at a time and ask them about their path and even the adversity they face, that's a big part of it as well, on the road to Cooperstown. It's really a dream job in a lot of ways. And I'm fortunate it's a collaboration, Matt, between the Hall of Fame itself and MLB Network Radio and Sirius XM. So basically the podcast airs every Saturday morning on Sirius XM Channel 89, and then it becomes available everywhere you get your podcast on Tuesday. And that's the routine. Our very ambitious goal is to interview every living Hall of Famer. Now, we have not yet completed it, but that's okay. We're still working towards it. But I've been grateful to speak with a lot of the greatest players ever, and very gracious in the interviews. And I would say, Matt, one of the surprises in some ways has been how comfortable they are talking about the tougher times. We've had players that are really tough that will shed a tear. Larry Walker, at the very end of our conversation, he was crying a little bit, touching on things about just the stress of playing the game and perspective they get after they retire. And Todd Helton referenced just his journey and how it took some time transitioning away from the game and just the mental strain of that. It was really, it's been an amazing experience to hear that these players who are at the peak of their profession, Matt, they, by talking about their struggles, they become more relatable and also even greater, right? Because they go through the same stuff that all of us go through in life, but then are able to do things that really no one else can do on the field. So just a lot of great conversations. Ted Simmons was one of my favorite episodes too. But I thought with Scott Rolen, and I encourage Cardinal fans to listen to it, I think one of my favorite parts of the whole podcast was what he shared about the 2006 stretch run in playoffs, about how, of course, as Cardinal fans know, he was out of the lineup for a while because of injury, then his shoulder wasn't responding, and Tony sat him a little bit, and there was some friction there between a couple of really proud guys who were both in the Hall of Fame, and Scott basically said, and I'm paraphrasing here, Tony was doing what he had to do, and I was doing what I felt I had to do, and he said, now their relationship is better than it's ever been. But you could just tell, and I remember even watching it and covering it at the time, you just had two really proud guys who love the game and want to be accountable in every possible way. And there was at times where that caused friction. And that's normal. And I think that now you when you're in it, I'm sure for Scott and for Tony it was uncomfortable. But now you look at it with years of remove and perspective, and Scott just has this amazing way of looking back at things and understanding maybe how it was that he interacted with the game. He even talked about how later on in his career when he was with the Reds, how sometimes having days off was good for him mentally because he was the kind of player, and again, Cardinal fans listening know this, who just grinded every single minute of every day that he was at Busch Stadium. There's no such thing as a moment off that he had. And I think that he, in time, later on in his career with the Reds, I think embraced those chances when Dusty Baker said, okay, Scott, you're off today. Be a dad. Be with your family a little bit more before the game. I think it freed him up mentally to really enjoy that last chapter of his career in Cincinnati.
I laughed out loud when he said the thing about when they told him, tell us when you need a day off. And he said, I'm not going to tell you that. But I won't get mad when you give me one.
that's not going to happen. Yeah. Basically, it's like the only concession he had, Matt, was I will not I won't turn the spread over and like trash the place if you tell me I got to have a day off. But like that is as close to asking for a day off as you would get, just to say, okay, Skip, I got you, and then just be okay with it. But that's, again, it's that intensity that is why he's such a special player. And I think that, you know, if you listen to his Hall of Fame speeches, I'm sure you did, the great wisdom of his dad from the basketball camp that he went to in West Lafayette as an 18-year-old, about how he said, you know, Dad, I'm out of basketball shape. I can't dribble, can't shoot, can't do anything. But basically his dad said, well, but can you hustle? Can you die for loose balls? Can you box out? And it's that way of looking at life to, again, no matter what you're doing in life, there's going to be hard times. And that was a hard time for an 18-year-old Scott Rolen. And the wisdom of that was you just fight through and do the things that require no talent, right? It's just, can you dive? Can you give max effort? Yeah, I can do those things. Okay, then do that. Do mm-hmm. that then was the part of the wisdom. And I just think that speech, Matt, for me, is just, you know, someone who's around youth sports and just kids in general, I try to bring little pieces of that and share that wisdom and say, well, to my kids, you may not want to listen to me, but Mr. Rowland's in the Hall of Fame, so maybe take a listen to what he has to say about things. And it does, I think, resonate, Matt, a little more when it comes to a Hall of Famer.
I don't want to give too much of the conversation away because it's fantastic, but I want to get into a couple other things that I thought were notable. He told the story of when he tried to, you know, attempt to just make things better with Tony La Russa. And I could see it in my mind because he talked about when you walk in at Busch Stadium, you have to walk by the home clubhouse to get over to the visiting clubhouse.
Right.
And he just made the decision to go in, ask if Tony was in his office. And he went in there and basically said, I'm done. And it wasn't like they hugged it out or anything in that moment. But, John, it seemed like that was the moment that laid the groundwork for those two eventually to have a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Matt. And I thought that was a pretty cool description. And again, Scott, knowing Scott, like, he wasn't going to necessarily walk in and say, I'm sorry, and then collapse into tears and give him a big hug. That's not really how he operates. But him saying, I'm done with the back and forth and any sort of holding of a grudge, that was about as far as he was going to go. And that was perfect because guess what? Tony's the same way. Right. And so that I think, just from knowing them both as I do, that made me smile. And I just, and actually, Tony, I just got word we're hoping to talk with him next week. And I can't wait for that conversation too, because, you know, whether it's the Jim Leland angle or the Rolen angle, my other favorite part about this is how often the stories of different Hall of Famers intersect with the other. And of course, on the 04 Cardinals, there was Larry Walker, there was Scott. Of course, Albert one day we'll be doing this interview with. It was interesting, too, and one of the things that I think it was probably in the first half of that podcast, as I'm thinking back on the conversation, we talked about the 04 NLCS and just how many great players were in that NLCS. Of course, it was going out at the same time as the iconic Red Sox comeback. But for me, that was one of the great postseason series that is just not talked about enough. All of the late lead changes, the Kent walk-off, the Edmonds walk-off, Edmonds catch, just moments, rolling in a big home run, just really great players having great series. Beltran, I mean, again, he's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame soon, of course, also a Cardinal. Berkman, you could easily make a case, of course, both an Astro and a Cardinal. Edmonds, I think you can make a case for. Just, I mean, think about all, not just the personalities and the players, but just these historic figures in the history of the game that were involved in that series. So, I just thought it was a really fun way to kind of get in the conversation. We talked about Philly. Of course, his exit there was kind of tough. He talked about actually walking off as the last out of the 2012 NLDS. So I think, Matt, for me, I'm lucky that, you know, I guess I've been around long enough that a lot of the players now I've covered or had a relationship in some way. And it's interesting how when you cover enough postseasons, there are certain games and moments and series that just kind of like are bookmarked in your mind. Like, I remember how the ballpark sounded that night or how it felt when I was there. That's just from being, you know, blessed to be around the ballpark enough to get a few stories to tell and then hopefully to know how to ask the right questions. And really my gratitude goes to the players themselves and the Hall of Fame managers, because they really are, they're special. And it's a great privilege to be able to have these conversations.
Final thing I wanted to ask you about, and it leads right into what you just said. He didn't get the opportunity to thank everybody in his speech, but what he did was he grabbed some Hall of Fame stationery in Cooperstown and wrote letters to all these people that had impacted his baseball journey. And all I could think of, what greater like piece of baseball memorabilia could there be than receiving a letter from a Hall of Famer on Hall of Fame stationery telling you how much you mean to him? Just a really cool thing he did.
You know what, Matt? That's one of my favorite parts of the conversation, too, because you could either have a second or two of your name being mentioned in the speech, which is great, don't get me wrong, or you could have what I'm sure is the case for all those people that he wrote those letters to. I would venture to say about 90% of those are now framed in the home offices of the people that received them, because that is a treasure among treasures. And so the story was that Scott was thinking about, okay, how am I going to handle this speech, and how am I going to have a chance to thank everybody that I want to? And the way that he kind of made his peace with it was, okay, I'm going to, instead of thanking everybody, because it's impossible to do that, I'm going to actually write these letters on the Hall of Fame stationery. And he was talking about how he was in the Hall of Fame gift shop, and he asked Whitney Horn, does such a great job in the communications department there and events planning. He basically said, hey, can I have some of these? Like, yeah, sure you can, Scott. You're good. You're a Hall of Famer. You can have the stationery. And so then he wrote a handwritten note thanking a number of people. So I just thought it was a touch of class. And certainly, Matt, you're in the Midwest. I'm in the Midwest. Scott's from Indiana. I do think that's one of the great parts of our culture. I try to instill it, too. And my mom certainly passed it on to me. Like, Johnny, write your thank you notes. So how cool is that? That's like the ultimate thank you note. When you get a thank you note from a Hall of Famer about, hey, I appreciate what you did to help me get here. That's about as cool of a thank you note as there ever is going to be written.
I listened last night on the SiriusXM app. If people want to get in contact with this and listen to this amazing conversation, with which we barely touched the surface on, where are the various places that they can find Road to Cooperstown?
Thank you, Matt. Yeah, so in the SiriusXM app, you can get it. There's a great record there of all the episodes that we've had. This is season two, so we've got plenty of them, as I mentioned. Some other Cardinal greats, Larry Walker already in there, Ted Simmons too. And so you can get them there, either in the app or wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple Podcast person, just search Road to Cooperstown. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Billy Wagner, a longtime nemesis of the Cardinals, he's the latest episode. And then actually next week, I believe, will be Tony Perez, and actually his son Eduardo joined us too. The first time we had a son join in, but I felt like with Eduardo being part of the MLB Network Radio family, it was a perfect way to bring in a co-host, if you will, for that one. That was a lot of fun too.
John, I mean, I so enjoyed the conversation, and I've heard a bunch of them, and they're all really, really good. Thank you for doing this. Thanks to the Hall of Fame for allowing you to do this, and I hope we can talk about many more of these conversations moving forward, because it's so much fun.
Well, thank you, Matt. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, and please reach out anytime. I think next year is going to be a brighter year for the Cardinals. They'll probably have a busy offseason, which I'm sure we can get to in our next conversation. But I always enjoy being in St. Louis. What a great baseball town, and look forward to the next conversation.
Awesome. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Matt. You too.
That's John Morosi joining us. We talked to him mainly about – we talked to him all about the road to Cooperstown, of course. You see John all over the place with MLB Network, and he's amazing, baseball insider. When I started that conversation, I thought we would get into some other stuff, but the Scott Rolen conversation was so good. Road to Cooperstown, find it wherever you get your podcast, SiriusXM as well. It's just over an hour, I believe, him and Rolen talking through his baseball journey. It is fantastic. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line. We're back with more in just a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Taking you for about another hour or so, our coverage of Cardinals baseball begins tonight at 7:50 as the Cardinals are in San Francisco to match up against the Giants. We're going to talk some college football here for a little while. Happy to welcome back onto the program. He is the publisher of College Football News at collegefootballnews.com. He is Pete Futak. You follow him on Twitter at Pete, F-I-U-T-A-K. Pete, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. When I originally wanted to have you on, I want to talk mainly Missouri and Illinois, and we'll get to that. But we did have some pretty big college football news today as Oklahoma State makes the decision to move on from Mike Gundy. He's been there a long time. He's had a ton of success. He really lifted that program. But they had fallen on hard times in recent years. They lose a home game to Tulsa. You just can't do that. And now all of a sudden, another pretty high-profile coaching job is available in college football.
Kind of crazy, and it's not just the last few years, because remember, they started 3-0 last year, and it was the new Big 12. There's no Oklahoma or Texas, and everything's going to change, and Oklahoma State was going to be one of the new stars of the conference. And then a bunch of injuries hit. They had no luck. They were in every game, just about every game. But then they lose their last nine. And the prevailing thought was that, okay, well, it's a blip and they'll just come back and be fine. And they came back worse and got blown out by Oregon. You can't lose to Tulsa. And so just like that, here's this guy who, you know, I will, you know, can't say something nice about him. I didn't like dealing with him personally, but still one of the best head coaches, you know, who did all this winning without the talent of an Oklahoma or a Texas. And just that 20 years of, you know, being great for the program, at least in terms of wins and losses, and just had one long streak and gone. So that was pretty fast.
Does he pop up again somewhere, or is this a guy who maybe transitions to something else, TV or something? It feels like from a national perspective, he's not exactly the most liked individual. Like, I don't know if you win the press conference bringing him in.
You know, it's one of those things where sometimes, well, we would see, because sometimes the people that the press does not like the most turn out to be pretty decent analysts. I mean, A.J. Pruszynski, for one, in the baseball world, is probably right up there. He's turned out to be pretty good and was not necessarily like Sterling Sharp was another. And, you know, certainly it happens. It could be he could turn into a personality real quick. So I could see him becoming a color commentator or just, you know, an offensive coordinator someplace big, you know, and just kind of like taking a break from the head coaching duties and just, you know, kind of handling, just doing the work of football, because sometimes these coaches at this point just like coaching football. And it's kind of hard to do that now in college because you have to be a CEO, a COO, and you have to deal with NIL and all the other stuff, the other parts of this thing. Sometimes these coaches just need just to take a big breath, take, you know, just relax and just go be a coach for a little while. And I think he's the type of guy who'd like to do that.
It wasn't that long ago that college football midseason firings were pretty rare, and now we're a month or so into the season, and there's, what, I guess three fairly high-profile jobs that have already come available. What is this connected to the businessification of college football with NIL and everything, that it's almost that much more like the NFL?
Yeah, that side of things, you do have money coming in from different sides, and you're starting now to try to figure out who's going to be the next person in place. And the other part of this thing, too, is it got rid of the idea of, oh, well, we can't get rid of our coach now because our recruiting class is going to suffer. Because recruiting classes still matter to a certain extent. You still need the, you know, you can't be all frosting and no cake. You got to have, you know, something there to build on. But not like it used to be. It used to be you can't fire a coach, like you said, because about the seniors and about this, about that. But no, if the guy's not getting the job done, and it's better to kind of, you know, go a different direction. The problem is when you fire a head coach, you really do kill the season. I mean, I think Tim Skipper is a pretty good coach, but UCLA might not win a game this year. You know, not that Deshaun Foster was going to change anything different, but like that's different there. And Oklahoma State now seems like a free space. So you really are kind of giving up on the year, which it's an interesting way to do it. But at the same time, you do have very screamy alumni type people who just want to see something happen. And they want to know that, oh, we get it. We're as mad as you are about us losing two football games or whatever. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes in Wisconsin going forward, see how it goes at, you know, some of these other spots. And certainly right out of the gate, Bill Belichick's not exactly doing a great job. So we'll see how this goes over the next few weeks.
All right, let's get into a couple teams here in the area that had very different weekends this past weekend. Missouri, they knock off South Carolina at home 29-20. That was a motivated South Carolina team coming off a loss at home to Vanderbilt the week before. Missouri's now sitting 4-0. They've won a rivalry game against Kansas. They've won a game against a good SEC opponent. They're in the top 25. When you look at this Mizzou team, what do you view their ceiling being?
Get to 10 wins. And speaking of new era, it's a new way to look at things. And to win a national championship or to really, it's not like basketball where all your goal is to get in the NCAA tournament. Maybe you get hot for 3 weeks. Maybe somehow you get a little luck with upsets and the bracket turns out right. And all of a sudden you find yourself in the Elite Eight and there, but for, you know, a shot here, a shot there, you've got a shot at something big. College football doesn't work like that. You're not going to just, you have to be one of the true elite of the elite of the elite that year, a powerhouse. You're never going to see a Boise State somehow get to the national championship unless something crazy happens. So if you're a Missouri or you're like a team that's maybe fourth or fifth best in the conference, yeah, if everything breaks right, you can get to the SEC championship and see who goes there. But realistically, if the SEC, if you go 10-2 in the with an SEC schedule, you're gonna find your way into the college football playoff. 9-3, as we've learned, probably not. But 10-2. Almost certainly, if you're from the SEC or the Big Ten, you're going
to
get in.
Their schedule, they've played, they're playing six straight home games to start the year. So their second half of the season is, it's a lot tougher. But you look at the season and you what's the path to 10 wins? Well, can they, their home field is great. Can they beat Alabama? Maybe. Going to Vanderbilt could be tough. Playing Texas A&M tough. Playing at Oklahoma tough. But it's, there's some, still a lot of winnable games, it seems like, on the schedule for Mizzou.
And it comes down to, well, if you're good, win some of these.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, yes, some teams get brutal, more brutal schedules than others. And Missouri's schedule does get far more difficult. But I think they get, what, UMass this week.
Yeah.
So you're 5-0. So you got to get five more wins somehow. So if you're that good, if you're a college football playoff good, yeah, you know what? Florida State was able to take care of Alabama. You know, rise up on the right day and win it. Again, you know, I'm not going to say Missouri – you know, can't do anything big, because this is not a year where there's an absolute killer in the SEC. Everyone in the SEC looks relatively vulnerable, except for actually Vanderbilt so far in a weird way, but that's Vanderbilt. So if you're Mizzou, you're not looking at there's not like a, oh, dear God, we can't get Alabama this year, or, oh, man, Georgia's at another level. So, yeah, if you're Mizzou, you're hoping to kind of catch the right breaks at the right time. Who knows if John Mateer's hand is going to be healthy. You know, when they get Oklahoma, who knows, you know, what's going to happen. So, yeah, right, they've done what they needed to do. I mean, South Carolina is a good team. They took care of them. Kansas is really dangerous, took care of that. And so if you've got five straight games at home, go 5-0 and go from there.
Pete, I was firmly on the Illinois bandwagon. I think I'm still kind of on it, but...
Yeah.
Man, I was really disappointed in the, and maybe just more credit needs to go to Indiana. Maybe Indiana's better than I was giving them credit for, but that was not a good performance this past weekend from Illinois.
It just was one of those games where I kind of took it as they just, for some reason, they just didn't have it. It's just some days you just, your team is just not there. They can't figure out how to hit the curveball, and Indiana came out just red hot and rolling, and it just all fell apart from there. I still believe in Illinois. That's a team, if you look at its schedule, yeah, again, Big Ten, same thing. Get to 10-2 and you're in. And Illinois can still do that. They still have – they get Ohio State at home. And this is kind of one of those quirky, weird teams that they could still lose again and beat Ohio State. So we'll see this weekend. This is they get USC. That is a funky test that they're going to have to deal with, because USC might just be that good. And then for Indiana – let's see at Iowa. You know, I've talked to a lot of people who just think, well, this is where, you know, Indiana starts to look the part. I'm like, not really. You know, this is one of the best coached teams in the country. They throw the ball well. Iowa couldn't stop the Rutgers passing game early on. So if, you know, Indiana, like, it's the question of all the offseason, well, who's this year's Indiana? Well, it's probably Indiana. The problem is they have to go to Oregon and to Penn State. So obviously that's probably two baked in losses, but everything else looks pretty good for them.
You should make collegefootballnews.com part of your everyday reading. Great content all the time. You can follow everything happening in college football. Again, collegefootballnews.com. And Pete Futak is their publisher, does a great job with it. Pete, thanks so much for taking the time. Hopefully we can catch up with you again a time or two here during the season.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
Awesome. Very good. That's Pete Futak joining us on the program. Again, the website at collegefootballnews.com. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us. Here's what we've still got coming up on the show tonight. Again, we've got you for just under an hour more. We're done just a little bit early tonight as we get out of here for Cardinals baseball. Cardinals pregame is going to start in 1 hour and 1 minute at 7:50 tonight as they match up against the San Francisco Giants. So we'll take you till then. Our friend Joe Roderick from STL Sports Central. He's going to join us after the 7 o'clock news. And we've got a few other things to get to as well. Might even get the opportunity to open up the phone lines if you want to talk some Cardinals baseball during the 7 o'clock hour. That's all coming up. We'll take one more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it as we start to wrap up hour number one of the program. Again, we've got Cardinals baseball coming your way in a little bit less than an hour for our pregame show as they match up against the San Francisco Giants tonight. First pitch is scheduled for 8:45 Central Time. Andre Pallante is going to be on the mound tonight. We'll talk more about Andre Pallante in the second hour. But I'd love to see him finish off the year with a little bit of momentum here, have a good start tonight. I'm so curious what they're going to do moving forward, just building the roster. I was joking around earlier with Kevin about what if there is a scenario where they move on from Lars Nootbaar, Nolan Gorman, Brendan, like everybody that we talk about, well, they could possibly get traded. What if there's a scenario where they all get traded? And then all of a sudden, Thomas Tejesi is your starting second baseman, and J.J. Weatherholt is your starting third baseman. And is that a possibility? It seems pretty extreme. It seems unlikely. But building this thing back up from the ground up to where they can get back to feeling like that this organization's humming along and allowing Heim Bloom to build this organization in the way that he wants it to be built again from the ground up, there's going to be value in that. So I think my number one question, and we'll get a little bit of an idea on the answer to this when we hear from individuals next week, but is this more about kind of staying the course on what they've done this year in playing a lot of young players, not bringing in a lot from the outside, be somewhat competitive at the big league level? If everything breaks right, maybe you make it into the playoffs while there's a lot of other stuff going on, and eventually it's going to be a lot better. Are they going to tear this thing down? Are they going to tear this thing all the way down and try to infuse as much young talent in the organization as possible and go from there? And then when you have somebody like Andre Pallante, where does that put him going into next year? Because it feels like he's not going to be guaranteed anything in spring training based off the way his season has ended. But at the same time, what are you going to have in the rotation? We'll talk more about that after the 7 o'clock news right here on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
All right, so I'll be honest with you. We're kind of messing with both the baseball gods and the weather gods, because if you've been following along for very long, you know that when we have an unexpected Sports Open Line because of a Cardinals rainout, it's kind of become our shtick that we bring Joe Roderick from STL Sports Central on. But I like Joe, and I like talking to him a lot, and I don't want it to just be, hey, the weather's bad, let's have him on. So I invited him on. But if something happens tonight where there's a rainout, a rain delay, I think we are responsible for this happening. We welcome Joe Roderick onto the program right now. Hi, Joe.
What's going on, Matt? So technically, I mean, there were a lot of rainouts in the area today. Over in the Illinois side, there is junior high baseball, school baseball.
Okay.
And a lot of games were canceled today due to the rain. So technically, there have been rainouts today.
All right. I mean, you're stretching, but I appreciate the effort.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. We were talking about you on STL Sports Central last week. We were sharing stories of times we might have accidentally insulted the great state of Kansas that I know that you went to school at. And Brendan Schaefer and I were both sharing such stories of times we might have made faux pas about the state of Kansas or your Wildcats.
So do you want to, we weren't expected to talk about this, but it was brought up again recently. I have an issue. I have an issue with like this story that gets told all the time. What? Okay, I love Norm Stewart. Norm Stewart is one of the all-time great college basketball coaches. Growing up in St. Louis, growing up in a family that rooted for Missouri, I understood the impact of Norm Stewart. But Joe, you know how there's the long story that Norm would never stay in Kansas and he would never spend a dollar in Kansas, that whole thing. You know that one?
I haven't heard that one, okay. But that's what makes a good rivalry. Yeah.
So the story about Norm Stewart is that he would never, like, the team would not stay in Kansas. So if they're playing at Kansas, that's an easy thing to do. You're 30 minutes from the Missouri border. Right. You can go stay in Kansas City and bus into Lawrence, and it's not a problem. So people tell that story over and over, and it got told a lot recently because the Missouri-KU football rivalry got built up. As a proud graduate of Kansas State and knowing a map, I know that Manhattan, Kansas is over 2 hours from the Missouri border. I don't think Norm was keeping his team in Kansas City on the nights before they played at K-State. I think I don't know for sure. Somebody can correct me. The text line is 314-436-7900. But every time somebody tells that story about Norm would never have his team stay in Kansas, they just only thought about the Jayhawks, and they don't think through that one where there's another team in Kansas 2 hours further where that story doesn't totally jive.
The passion in your voice. I could tell you're a guy that you've been itching to have something to be passionate about over the last several months, and the Cardinals just haven't been doing it for us, right?
Well, and then K-State football's terrible this year, so I can't like even be happy about that. So all I could do is moan and complain about a story that's existed for 30 years about the great Norm Stewart that I think there's holes in that story. That's all I'm saying. I think there are holes in that story that do not get investigated when it gets brought up. Speaking of the Cardinals, Joe, they're not going to the playoffs this year, even though they're not mathematically eliminated. But there's something to be said for a team that's still playing hard and going out and winning games. They took 2 or 3 from the Brewers. They beat the Giants last night. I mean, they're not just phoning it in for the rest of the year.
Right. And how are you going about addressing people that'll sit there and say, hey, they're still alive. They're still alive. It's like, stop it. They're not alive. Like, they haven't been alive since the Yankee series. That's when I tapped out. That's when I said this on multiple shows. Like, that was the series where I was like, all right, you know what? I'm done. Like, I'm not going to let you hurt me anymore. I'm not going to go into these series and go, hey, if we get 2 out of 3, if we sweep, like, we have a chance. Like, I'm just done being hurt by the 2025 Cardinals. I'm ready to move on past it. And then you look at the standings and you're just like, how are they 3.5 games back with a handful of games left to play? Like, it just makes no sense. Like, I remember those teams, the Albert Pujols teams, and even the few years after him, where you kind of looked at it and you're like, you know what, like La Russa, the Matheny days, the Schilt days, like you looked at those and you're like, this is, the DeWitts did an incredible job for 20 years. Mo, throughout his entire tenure, the Cardinals, practically every single year, were playing meaningful baseball in September. And by meaningful baseball, you mean, playoff contending baseball. Like, they weren't eliminated until the last week or, weekend of the season. And for all of the, for looking at it this year, they still are kind of maintaining. I mean, they have 5 games left, and they have not been eliminated from postseason contention. And I know it's different, that back then there were 4 playoff teams, now there's 6. So, you put a little asterisk next to it. But it's, Matt, like, I'm frustrated with this season when it comes down to it. Like, you kind of look at the overall part of the season, you're just like, if they would have tried just a little harder to amp up the pitching staff at any point, they would easily be 2 games ahead of the Giants and Reds right now going into this final week. And it's really frustrating to look back into January and February and see just how little they did.
Yeah. And I'll call myself out. I held on to hope a little bit longer than you did. Really, it wasn't until they took 2 out of 3 from San Francisco at home. And I was like, man, there's a chance that they really go on. If they have a great road trip here, if they go 4-2 against Seattle and Milwaukee, maybe there's something there. And then they didn't, and that's when I got to my point of saying, okay, this is, I didn't think it was going to happen, but now I know it's not going to happen. But to your point, there's two things here, Joe. It's, do you want to build a team that's just going to be good enough to get into the postseason, or do you just completely scrap any idea of like shooting for the postseason this year? If it happens, it happens, but you're not going to actively do anything for it because you're totally focused on what it's going to look like in the years beyond this year. And they did do the latter. I understand, Joe, why they did the latter, but at the same time, when they're sitting, you know, three or so games out of a playoff spot with five games to go, you start to say to yourself, man, there'd be value in this being a playoff club.
It's one of those where you kind of look at the overall picture, and if we were being told that the team was going to show some financial responsibility and they didn't want to go out and spend $10 million, $15 million on anyone because they thought of this as a runway season. You're telling me, like, you and I have both seen the attendance at Busch Stadium this year. We've seen how empty that stadium is. You're telling me that if they would have spent $15 million on a starter that was better than Eric Fetty or Andre Pallante, and then add to that also having Michael McGreevy make 30 starts instead of 20 this season, and they made, you're telling me that if this team was two games up, again, if they were two games up in a wild card right now, you're telling me Busch Stadium wouldn't have been so much more filled this whole summer that they would have made back that $10 million, $15 million that they would have spent on one guy? That's where the math doesn't make sense to me on that.
I would love to be able to hop in the DeLorean and watch that scenario play out and see how fans would have reacted to this team being a team that was fighting, like, really in there for like a wild card spot, but clearly not one of the better teams in baseball and still being around 500. I'm not saying you're wrong, Joe. I don't know how the fans would have reacted. It has become such a cool thing for a certain percentage of St. Louisans to puff their chest out and say, I'm not going to a Cardinals game until things change. Like, I don't know if there would be some increase in your scenario, but I'd love to know how much of an increase it actually would have been.
And those are also the same fans that sit there and they want to say, oh, fire everybody, sell the team, rebuild, tear it all down. And then they complain about games like 2 weeks ago against Milwaukee where the Cardinal bullpen gave up a 7-1 lead. Like, the Cardinal fans, I would say a majority of Cardinal fans do not have the stomach to go through a 90, 95, 100 loss season. That's what a rebuild is. That's what tearing it all down is. I don't think Cardinal fans are programmed to deal with that. So you could sit there and you could say, oh, I'm not, I don't want to support this team. They need to fire everybody and start over. But then you sit there and you complain when they lose a game. Like, you can't have it both ways. And it's just one of those things that I see it in the comments. I'm sure you see it in the text line and phone calls that you get too, that just you can't have both sides of it.
No, you can't. And I don't know if the fan base has ever been as fractured as they are right now. Like, so much of them are unhappy, but so many of them are unhappy for different reasons. People are unhappy that Mo's around. People are unhappy that Marmol's around. People are unhappy that they didn't go more into a rebuild. People are unhappy that they didn't put more into the roster. Like, there's a lot of unhappiness, and it comes from a lot of different ways. And I have to remind myself, Joe, when I'm doing these shows and I see these messages, that these are individuals that are saying things. They're not speaking for the group, because it seems like there are so many different areas of kind of like discontentment with this fan base right now.
And you know what, Matt, I think those people that are mad at those things, man, they're going to be a whole lot more upset, I think, come next Tuesday, because I have a strong feeling that we're about to find out that Ollie deservedly is going to get a year or two extension on his contract. I really believe that's going to be Heim Bloom's, one of his first orders of business is he's going to extend Ollie, and Ollie deserves the heck out of that this year after what he's done with this team and what he was given this season. And I really hope he takes it and absolutely runs with it.
I would be fine with that. I don't know if that's it'd be an interesting decision. Like my thought process has always been, I think it would make sense to bring Ollie back so Heim can sit there and see whether or not the two really are good at working together. You know, generally I don't like the idea of a lame duck guy, but in Heim's first year, letting the two kind of navigate the thing together. But if they want to give Ollie a contract extension, I'm not going to be upset about it.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe seen more of the interaction behind the scenes than I have. I would hope that there's been plenty of interaction, of conversations with Heim and Ollie this whole season. As you know, really none of us have really had a chance to talk much to, I haven't talked to Heim Bloom at all. I don't know if you have in any capacity, but, you know, it's one of those where I think we are all waiting to hear what he has to say next week.
I've talked to him a little bit. He's a really good guy. We haven't talked a lot of baseball stuff. When I see him, I ask him, how's the move going? When's the family going to get here? Things like that. We'll have plenty of time to talk baseball with him here moving forward. Starting next week, there's going to be a press conference, I assume, at some point next week where he's going to speak. And I'm going to be really curious what it's going to look like, because you said the Cardinals fans don't have a stomach for an extreme rebuild. There is a legit possibility that they are going to go down that path.
And you know what? If they go down that path, but they have exciting players here playing, that's okay with me too. If J.J. Weatherholt is starting opening day next year, and you have J.J. Weatherholt and Ivan Herrera in your starting lineup, that's going to be fun to watch, because I know you talked to Bernie a whole lot, and we have Bernie on STL Sports Central. We have him writing for us every day too. The numbers that he has thrown out there and kind of brought to light about the season Ivan Herrera is having, man, just let the dog eat.
Yeah.
I mean, it is going to be, if he wants to catch, let him catch next year. If he wants to play left, if he wants to just have his bat in the lineup for 162 games, figure out what that needs to look like of him being healthy and able to play every day, and just let him mash and see what that looks like with guys like him and Weatherholt in the lineup together.
I actually think that's the reason not to have him catch, so you can have him in the lineup more often. I thought that way about Wilson Contreras, and we really didn't see a jump in his numbers this year just because he was at first base, and that surprised me a little bit. But if they and Ollie addressed that when he talked today earlier on the Gas House Gang, but it seems like they very openly said they were worried about the impact on his lower body when he was catching, and that led to injuries. If they have that worry at all, I don't think he should be catching, because like you, I want to see him in the lineup as often as possible.
Yeah. And I guess that's where I open the ability to let him catch. I don't, you know, make that his third position and just have him in there once a week. And I guess that probably really, really handicaps your defense for that one day. But if he's your catcher and you can get offensive production out of the catching position that you really didn't get a whole lot of this year, that opens up so much more opportunity in that lineup, I think.
Folks should check out STL Sports Central. Joe Roderick is a big part of the team there. He mentioned Bernie Miklas earlier. If you want to read Bernie's written content and take in his videos, they're all available at STL Sports Central. They've got a lot more written content. They've got videos all the time for just about every sport in St. Louis. They're doing more stuff with SEC football. They've got a sister site with that. Joe, did I miss anything? Is there anything else I need to plug when it comes to STL Sports Central?
We're going to have a whole lot of blue stuff starting up here outside of the written stuff we already have. We will have you covered with absolutely everything. College football, hockey, baseball, everything. It really is a one-stop shop for all things St. Louis area sports.
We appreciate your time. We hope that there's not a rain out today because of this conversation, and we will have you on again very, very soon.
Sounds good, Matt. Good talking to you.
Very good. That's Joe Roderick joining us here on the program. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us. We are, 23 minutes away from, 28 minutes away. Math was never my strong suit. Thankfully, there's other people who can do math for me in the very important situations. We're 28 minutes away from our coverage of Cardinals baseball tonight. They are in San Francisco. They are going to match up against the Giants. Going to continue that conversation that I started earlier. And this is an opportunity for you to chime in a little bit. We'll actually open up the phone lines if you want to do that. You can get in here at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me as well, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. Just jumping off the conversation that we were just having, what are your expectations for next season? And not like a win-loss standpoint, but the approach that they are going to take. And we're going to find it out next week at some point in time, I think. I think from a communication standpoint, they're going to do a nice job of pointing us in the direction that they are going. But where are you at? If we can all sit here and agree that the eventual goal is for this team to be a legit World Series contender more often than not, how do they get there? What would you like to see? And let's talk. If your answer is they need to go sign Kyle Tucker, I don't think that's a conversation to be had, because I don't think they're going to spend that kind of money. So knowing that there are restrictions, there are things that they're not going to do, what would you like them to do? We'll take your text messages, 314-436-7900. That's where you can call as well. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, or you can leave a comment in the chat on the video stream for those of you who are watching us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. We'll be back with more of a Graybar Sports Open Line in just a moment right here on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are taking you tonight to about 7:45. Then we'll break for about 5 minutes, and then we'll get into Cardinals baseball. Cardinals Giants tonight. Again, Andre Pallante on the mound looking for his 7th win. Logan Webb is going to make the start for the Giants. Logan Webb is having a pretty nice season. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. And for those of you who are watching on the video stream, you can leave a comment. So my question for you, if you want to get in here, is where are you at in terms of what you want to see for this team moving forward, and how comfortable are you with them potentially taking even more of a step back to eventually surge forward, allowing Heim Bloom to put his fingerprints, everything. We'll start with Tom, who has given us a call. Hey, Tom, you're on Sports Open Line.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And it's a little bit of a different direction than what the question you just asked, but I hope you'll let me share it with you.
Okay.
It's regarding my frustration is with the Cardinals. They got a sweetheart of a deal on that between the parking garages and everything, the price they paid for it. And since then, they've taken money out of the team. They built the ballpark village. They built the condos, all the businesses down there. They've taken money out of the club for other ventures. They've been successful too, but now the team needs a little bit of money. And they're acting like those other ventures, oh, no, those are standalones. It all goes back to the fans now. You know, and again, that's my frustration. You see where I'm coming from? They didn't have those things if it wasn't for the team.
Yeah.
And now the team needs a little help, and it seems like they're blaming it all on the fans, and they can't put no more money into the team.
So, Todd, stay on the line, Tom. I want to have a conversation with you, and I hear the passion in your voice. I disagree with you a little bit, and this is why. And to be fair, I wasn't here as Ballpark Village was being built up, but I don't think they were taking away from the club at that point, and I don't think they're – when they're not, when they didn't spend money this past offseason, it wasn't because they didn't have the money to spend. It was because they were making the decision that they were going to go through this reset and the runway season and all these sort of things. I think you're connecting two things that are not connected. The Ballpark Village business is its own business. It is profitable. I don't think those two things interact very much, and I would argue that if the Cardinals were in more of a winning window right now, they would have been perfectly fine spending more money.
So you think that they got all those things without the team? Soon they have gambling down there. Also, they're going to have that now. All those things were revenue from the team. You know what I mean? All the signage, all the advertisements, the concessions. So when it goes down and they need a little help, you know, I agree with you. It's more poor decisions than it was money the past few years.
I mean, to be really blunt, Tom, I think you are, I think you are discounting just how rich the DeWitts are. They didn't have to, steal from Peter to pay Paul. Like that was not something that they needed to do.
Okay, let me put it another way. Okay, they never want to pay a guy that's got a bad contract. Here's the way I always look at that. If you're already paying Arenado $17 million, and let's just say the replacement's a rookie or somebody that's only going to make the minimum, all it's going to cost you to make that change is what you're paying the guy coming in at the minimum, because you've already spent the other money, okay? So all it's going to cost you to make that change for the good of the team is spending their $650,000 or whatever. I mean, whatever the minimum is for these kids. But no, they won't admit that mistake, so they'll put that guy out there and hurt the team because they don't want to eat that money.
Yeah, Tom, we're like-minded on that one. I think the Cardinals need to do a better job of accepting the fact that there's some bad contracts, and walking away from a bad contract and eating that money can be more beneficial than sticking with somebody just because you're paying them. So, Tom, we're totally in agreement on that one.
Well, I take too much of your time already. Well, thanks a lot for taking my call.
You bet.
I appreciate it.
Thank you to you as well. I appreciate it. Yeah, they didn't need to take from the ballpark to build Ballpark Village. And it is, I've never seen the books. From what I know and from what I understand, I think it is a thriving business that they have going on. And now the Ballpark Village people, this is where I need to just shut up, because I'm going to say something that's not true. The designers of Ballpark Village are the people who are going to be doing the Millennium Project. What I don't know is if there's going to be like an official connection between Ballpark Village and the Millennium Project. I would love for, but even just from a downtown aesthetic standpoint, the fact that they are so close to each other, and Ballpark Village looks really cool. Can we all agree that? Ballpark Village is a really, really cool looking thing. The towers are cool. It's vibrant, where we're living in an area with a downtown that a lot of these buildings are not vibrant, and many of these buildings don't have anything in them. It is nice to have an area where you got some cool looking buildings that have stuff going on. There's lots of cool looking buildings in downtown. Don't get me wrong. We've got amazing architecture here in downtown St. Louis. But the fact that the Millennium Project is going to look very similar, have kind of the same, I don't know, I'm not an architecture guy, so I'm not going to use the right words, but have the same vibe as what's going on at Ballpark Village, I think it's just going to help make downtown look that much better. Jim sends in a message, says, go after a veteran outfielder who gives you 20 to 30 home runs, trade Arenado and Walker for starting pitching, keep Sonny Gray, go with that to start the season, see how the rest of the young guys develop. So, Arenado doesn't have trade value. That's the first thing. Because of the money that he is owed. Now, if you want to pick up the vast majority of his contract, he'll have a little bit of trade value because of who he still is from a defensive standpoint. But this is a declining offensive player. That's who he is. And are there teams that would be interested in Arenado? Yes. Are there teams that are going to be interested in Arenado and paying him what he is, picking up most of his contract? Probably not. Now, the money does go down a little bit here over the next couple seasons, so that is going to help when it comes to that. But there's still a fair amount of money there. So Arenado doesn't have a lot of trade value in terms of what you're going to get back for him. I don't know what Walker's trade value is going to be, but I wouldn't trade him. I would actually just stick him at AAA and let him be. They're probably not going to do this, but I would go into spring training next year with the legit thought that Jordan Walker might not play a game in the big leagues next year. That you're going to send him to AAA, and you're going to ask him to do something really, really challenging, because he can mash AAA pitching the way he currently goes about it. But the way he currently goes about it doesn't work in the big leagues. So go ask Jordan Walker to do all the things that you have asked him to do, and to do it at AAA, where he is just going to know that if he reverts back to the way he has been, he's going to have success. But it's about the discipline of becoming the hitter that the Cardinals want him to become. Because I know people don't want to hear it, and there is not a single player who is more frustrating and who underachieved more than Jordan Walker on the Cardinals this year. But you cannot ignore the fact that all the underlying numbers scream superstar. That doesn't mean he's going to become that. Maybe he never gets out of his own way. Maybe he never makes the tweaks that you need to be able to tweak to do these things. And if that ends up happening, you lose him for nothing. But he cost you nothing right now. You don't trade that away. You try to develop it. You try to cultivate it. You try to push forward as much as you possibly can. So I think they trade Arenado, but I don't think they get much back for him. I don't think they trade Walker. I would not guarantee anything for next year. They do need to add in the outfield. They need a right-handed bat in the outfield. I don't know what that's going to look like. Again, that's something where what we hear from Chaim Bloom, whenever he does speak, I would assume it's going to be at some point next week, that what direction is this team going? Text message from 618 asks about Jordan Walker. Really good question here. Do you believe that Jordan Walker's failures the last couple of years are due to the league adjusting to him, or have the Cardinals tinkered with him so much that they've ruined him? It's the first part, because really, Kevin Wheeler, I'm parroting Kevin Wheeler here, but Kevin's right. So I think it's a really good point that I like to make as well. He's made some changes, like in his stance, how wide open he is, how close he is to the plate, or how far away he is from the plate. He has made those changes, but the actual swing is the exact same swing that he has when he got here. He really hasn't made changes. He goes through some periods where the swing is a little bit different, but then it always just reverts back to what it's always been. So I get frustrated when people point to his start of his big league career and the success he had then, and then try to turn that into, well, the Cardinals messed him up. No, the league adjusted. The league 100% adjusted to him, and he's never adjusted back. There is no sport that has more adjustments from each side than baseball. You are always in a period of adjustment. You're adjusting to the league, or the league is adjusting to you. It is a constant battle. And the players who do it best are the players who have really, really long careers. And honestly, Walker hasn't adjusted yet. He hasn't made that first adjustment. In many ways, he's that same guy when he first got here, and the league has adjusted, and his swing decisions are terrible. That's the first step. That's the first step for Walker, because we know he's got one of the most elite bat speeds in all of baseball. That alone tells you, when he makes contact, he's going to hit the living you know what out of the ball a lot. So the first thing he needs to do is stop swinging at pitches that he can't make contact with. All the other stuff that you got to fix, get a little bit more loft on the ball, some, you know, things like that, that will come. That will come. But if you can just start getting him to a point where he is not swinging at terrible pitches that he has no chance of hitting, if you just get rid of that part of his game, well, he's going to become an exponentially better ball player at the snap of a finger. Because when he makes contact, the other night, a couple nights ago, he had a ball off his bat. What was it, like 117 or 118? It was the hardest hit ball by a Cardinal in the StatCast era. So the StatCast era, they've been measuring exit velocities since, I think it's 2015, if I have that right. Maybe it's 28. The exact year doesn't matter. But he hit the living you-know-what out of the ball, more so than any Cardinal ever before. Would you like for there to be a little bit of loft on that, for him to hit line drives and to get into the gap and to sometimes put it over the wall and do all that sort of stuff? Yeah, but that can come later. Right now, just go hit the ball really, really flipping hard, because that's what you have the ability to do, and then stuff can come later. One of the cliches in baseball is, you know, power is the last skill to develop. That's true. He's still a really young dude. So I'm not – a year ago, I was more worried about launch angle and stuff like that. Not as worried about that with him right now. Better swing decisions, make better contact, do those things, and it starts to get better right away. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Only about a minute left here in the program as we get you set for Cardinals baseball tonight. Certainly appreciate everybody who was on the program today. Really enjoyed the conversation. Not that I didn't enjoy the conversation with everybody, but had a lot of fun talking with John Morosi, because he recently spoke with Scott Rolen for a really long time as part of his Road to Cooperstown show, which is a podcast and part of MLB Network Radio. And he talks with Hall of Famers and just goes through their story. I love the Scott Rolen conversation. Listened to it last night. If you didn't hear John Morosi, you can always go back in the archive and find it. But find that Road to Cooperstown. And then Pete Futak, Joe Roderick, certainly appreciate them being on with us as well. But that is it for this edition of the program. Of course, we don't want you to go anywhere. Why? Well, we've got Cardinals baseball. It's the Cardinals. It's the Giants. And our pregame coverage begins in exactly 5 minutes right here on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.